This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. So find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
And welcome to episode 208 of the True Crime All the Time Unsolved podcast. I'm Mike Ferguson, and with me as always is my partner in true crime, Mike Gibson. Gibby, what is going on with you?
Hey, man, I'm doing good. How about you?
Hanging in there?
Yeah.
Doing my thing?
Doing your thing?
Mowed the grass?
Did you?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Actually, I had some fun.
Yeah?
Mowing the grass. I always have fun in the beginning because you haven't done it for such a long time. And then, you know, as the summer wears on, you're like, man, I really don't want to cut this grass anymore.
Yeah. You still trying to chase that squirrel around on
sure,
your mower?
Yeah. Sure. My mower's not quite quick enough, but.
Yeah, but it's fun.
It's fun.
I mean, your yard looks all jacked up, but I got it.
It's not the best mow job you've ever seen.
Right.
But it's more fun that way.
Yeah.
All right, Gibbs, we continue to see some great support. Let's give some shout outs. For Patreon, we had Inger Alice.
Hey, Inger.
Crystal Gregory.
Hey, Crystal.
Shelly Skinner.
What's up, Shelly?
Jump in 1126.
Well, come on, jump.
Kim Mladenik.
I'm just going to go with Kim.
Okay. I think I got that pretty close. Michelle Dolderer.
Hey, Michelle.
Brenna Kelly.
What's going on, Brenna?
Piper Phillips.
What's up, Piper?
Derek Shelton.
Hey, Shelton.
Allison May.
Hi, Allison.
Jessica Akers.
Hey, Akers.
Heather Carter.
Appreciate that, Heather.
Jennifer from Luxembourg.
What's going on, Luxembourg in the house?
Barbara Alfano.
Hey, Alfano.
Denise Jenkins.
I appreciate that, Denise.
Tamara Brown.
Hey, Tamara.
Harry.
Hey, good old Harry.
Robin Wilson.
Hey, Robin.
Taylor.
Hi, Taylor.
Ashley Phelps.
Well, thanks, Phelps.
And last but not least, Danielle Lertik.
Hey, Lertik.
So we appreciate all that new support. And then if we go back into the vault, Gibbs. This week, we selected our good friend, Allison Thompson.
Yeah, thanks, Allison.
So have hung out, you and I have, with Allison a number of times at CrimeCon, and she's just been a really good supporter of the show and been with us a long time.
Yeah, appreciate her.
We had some great PayPal donations as well from Ashley Odoms.
Hey, Ashley.
Jennifer Benson.
What's going on, Jennifer?
Kathy Anderson.
Hey, Kathy.
And Sarah Strauss.
Hey, Strauss.
So thanks to all of you as well. Gibbs, right now on True Crime All the Time, we have an episode out on Gregory Fester and Jessica Reed, a couple of troubled teens who went on a crime spree fueled by drugs and a search for adrenaline that ended in the murders of two innocent people. So it's a good episode. Make sure you check that out. All right, man. Are you ready to get into this episode of True Crime All the Time Unsolved?
And I am.
We are talking about one murder and one disappearance that happened in Australia in the 1990s. And we're putting these two cases together because I think there are a number of people that believe there could be a connection between these two unsolved Australian cases. On October 11th, 1995, a 20-year-old Italian tourist body was uncovered on Beaumaris Beach in Tasmania, Australia, with multiple stab wounds and other signs of physical trauma. The discovery of Victoria Cafasso's body caused fear and suspicion among the residents of Beaumaris. The incident led some residents to believe that Victoria's death is linked to the disappearance of another tourist, Nancy Grunwald, who vanished in 1993. In 1995, Victoria Anna Elizabeth Cafasso visited Tasmania, Australia, as an Italian tourist. During her childhood, Victoria was raised in Ospi di Leti, a small town on the Italian Riviera.
That's a good place to grow up.
It sounds fancy.
Yeah, the Italian Riviera. I like it.
Bet you I could get some good olives.
Man.
You know the food.
It's going to be really good.
It has to be amazing there.
Yeah.
But the thing with Victoria was that she often visited England, as she had family, and she also had citizenship in Britain as well. Victoria was 20 years old when she decided to take some time off from college, where she was studying to be a lawyer, to explore life outside of Italy.
See, I wish I would have taken some time off when I was going to law school.
Yeah, you probably should have.
Yeah.
Maybe then you wouldn't have gotten burnt out and
not finish.
Your life would have gone in a different direction.
Right.
A much less criminal direction.
Well, that's true.
Probably.
Yeah. I did learn a few things, though.
I'm sure you did. Some tricks and tips and
very helpful
things like that. In July of 1995, Victoria traveled to England to stay with her grandparents while she was figuring out what she wanted to do with her life. Victoria was not satisfied, though, with her visit to England, and she decided to broaden her horizons with a trip to Australia. And Gibbs, I think this is something that happens to a lot of kids while they're in college. Number one, it's a grind.
Sure it is.
I mean, anybody that went through all or part of it will tell you it can be a real grind. And my oldest is going through it right now. She's got maybe 2 or 3 weeks left until summer break, and man, she cannot wait. And I think what it does is it causes a lot of kids to say, okay, I just want to take a year off. I want to go backpacking through Europe. You hear that quite often.
You do.
I'm going to come back and finish up, but I'm not going to do 4 or 5 years straight. Some kids just can't do it or don't want to do it.
I wonder over in Europe, do they say, man, I just want to take a year off and go backpacking through North America?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Or Australia or somewhere other than Europe.
Yeah.
Victoria Cafasso had a very supportive family, and they accompanied her on her trip to Australia. She arrived in Tasmania with her Italian family and British grandmother. Victoria's mother, Xenia, owned a travel business in San Remo, while her father was a former criminal lawyer.
Giuseppe. I don't know if you can get more Italian than that.
No, that's pretty Italian.
Yeah.
She also had a younger sister named Alexandra. During the visit to Tasmania, Victoria and her family stayed with her cousin, Simon de Solis, who lived in the area. According to the Tasmania Mercury newspaper, Wednesday, October 11th, 1995, started out as a normal day for the family. Victoria and Simon maintained their routine as usual and had breakfast together in the morning. After breakfast at around 9 a.m., Victoria decided to leave for a walk on the beach. That sounds a lot like my wife's vacation routine.
Yeah.
Breakfast and then walk on the beach. That's like her ideal day.
You're okay with the breakfast part.
But you know I don't like the beach that much.
No, you're like, you go enjoy your walk on the beach. I'm going to enjoy myself far away from that beach.
In the indoors. Although it was early in the day, no one could have suspected that this innocent walk to the beach would trigger a chilling mystery. Around 1:30 p.m., a local woman named Margaret McIntyre was walking her dog on Beaumaris Beach. To her surprise, she found the body of a young female lying on the shoreline of the beach. The woman was lifeless, with water lapping over her body. She was wearing a bikini top that was pushed up over her breasts. She was nude from the waist down. This young female had apparent stab wounds on her body. Margaret McIntyre, after seeing the body, was in a state of shock. And who wouldn't be, Gibbs? You're kind of taking a stroll along a scenic area, a beach,
right?
Taking in the sun, hearing the waves crashing, and then all of a sudden you stumble upon a dead body.
It's not how you want to get your morning started.
No, it would be a shock to anyone, and it's going to ruin anyone's day.
Yeah.
And not just that day. These type of discoveries have repercussions and trauma and PTSD that last a long time.
Oh, for sure.
For a lot of people who are put in this situation.
Again, this is another reason why you don't like to take walks on the beach, just in case you would find something like that.
Small reason.
Small.
But
still a reason.
The possibility is there. Margaret sought help from a nearby house where two men, Jeffrey Adams and Russell Harwood, lived. The two men ran over to the beach and saw the body. Russell and Margaret called the authorities at 1:37 p.m., while Jeffrey remained with the body. When the authorities arrived, police officers asked Jeffrey Adams to find a tarp so that they could cover up the body. After grabbing the item, he returned to the crime scene. But when he got back, he saw that the body had been moved up the beach because the tide was coming in. And it was at this new location where the photos of the body were taken and the tarp was placed over the body. When the authorities arrived at the beach site, Constable Ferguson, obviously a guy with a lot of knowledge.
I would say so.
Just based on the name.
The alone. Constable part?
Ferguson.
Oh, okay.
This guy noticed two sets of footprints. One set of footprints was leading to the crime scene, and the other led to a river. The problem is officers didn't create a cast of these footprints and they didn't protect them from the elements, and the wind later erased them. During the investigation of the crime scene, police officers expanded their search radius to discover more clues about the victim's death. Some distance away from the body was an area of the beach where it appeared as though the sand had been heavily disturbed. And this kind of disturbance led investigators to believe that Victoria had fought hard against her attacker before dying. Her body was found about 170 feet away. Investigators drew a perimeter of about 8 feet at this location of heavily disturbed sand. They found some possessions that they believed belonged to the victim, such as sunscreen and a Sony Walkman.
You still have your Walkman?
Dude, Sony Walkman was one of the best things ever made. They also found a pair of white sandals, a watch, bangle, a ring, sunglasses, a scarf, and a purse. Within the purse, authorities found some personal papers, $509 in Australian currency, and some other foreign currency as well. And with so many items still present at the crime scene, police concluded that the death was unlikely to have been a robbery gone wrong. And I think most importantly, Gibbs, they now knew who the victim was. 20-year-old Victoria Cafasso. Victoria's body was transferred to the Royal Hobart Hospital, where forensic pathologist Tim Lyons performed an autopsy. There were obvious signs of trauma on her body. Her body had bruises and lacerations, indicating that she had experienced a very violent attack before she was killed. There was evidence of bludgeoning on the body, suggesting that Victoria was hit with a powerful blunt force. Three of her teeth were knocked out and her nose was broken. So what they believed was that this trauma would have been enough to have rendered her unconscious. Additionally, she was stabbed a total of 21 times, 20 in her upper torso and once in her neck. She also had dozens of slash wounds to her arms and face. The forensic pathologist concluded that only two weapons could have been used for her body to show this degree of violence. The weapons included a blunt object and a knife. And although she had pieces of her clothing missing, there was no sign of sexual assault. The postmortem was consistent with evidence that she struggled against her attacker because of the cuts and bruising on her arms. However, exposure to the elements made it difficult to determine the time of her death. Forensic scientists could only use tidal charts to approximate. It's estimated that Victoria Cafasso was murdered between 11:30 a.m. and 12:40 p.m. on October 11th. Her death resulted from heavy blood loss sustained from her stab wounds and other injuries. Her death certificate says the cause of death is exsanguination due to multiple stab wounds, including wounds to the right atrium.
Well, when you lose basically all your blood in your body, that will do it.
Yeah, she bled to death. But obviously, this was a vicious attack from start to finish.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty clear based on the evidence that the beginning of the attack was designed to silence her. Because let's not forget, we're on a pretty crowded beach. It's early in the morning, but what are the chances that someone is going to walk by? You can't have, as a perpetrator, your victim screaming and making a bunch of noise. So it sounds like she was knocked out. And then he stabbed her over and over, and she died from blood loss.
With that amount of stab wounds, definitely rage.
Yeah, I think it could be rage. Oftentimes we see the number of stab wounds being very high and think, okay, this person is mad. This is rage. But we've also seen a lot of killers get sexual gratification from their stabbings. And so it could be something like that as well. Not rage, but in a sick, twisted, perverted way, this person is getting some type of sexual gratification with every thrust of the blade. And that's sick. I know it is, but we also know it happens. We can each speculate because this is an unsolved case and the police don't know. There's only one person that knows, or in the event that it was more than one person, right?
Oh yeah.
The killer or killers are the only people that would know for sure.
Very true.
Early in the investigation, the police had requested Interpol to investigate if Victoria's death was somehow linked to organized crime violence. Her late grandfather, Aldo Cafasso, was a former chief of police in Rome in the 1970s. And they did investigate, and Interpol reported that her death was not connected to any organized crime threat. This elimination of any type of overseas related crime meant that the perpetrator was most likely someone local to the area.
That's a pretty interesting avenue, though, to think about, right? That it could have been related to her grandfather's activities back then.
Well, I think if you're the chief of police in Rome in the 1970s and the police find this out, right, that her grandfather held this position, I think it's an avenue that you have to go down.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, as a chief of police, you're going to make enemies. Could you have made enemies of someone involved in La Cosa Nostra? Maybe.
Maybe.
I just like to say La Cosa Nostra.
You do like saying that. You say it a lot, actually.
I do. Sometimes it makes sense too. Sometimes it doesn't.
But when you make a reservation for us to have lunch and you put underneath that, it doesn't really make sense.
Well, it's this thing of ours.
Yeah.
That could be lunch. That could be organized crime. It can apply to a lot of things.
It could.
I think the biggest problem that police had, Gibbs, was just the lack of evidence to help narrow the suspect pool. Investigators looked at several of the 300 residents living in the Beaumaris Beach area as possible persons of interest. So it's not a lot. I mean, no. We're not talking about having to wade through 10, 20, 30,000 people if indeed the perpetrator is local. And despite an estimated 50 people who passed by the beach between 8:30 a.m. and 1:30 p.m., not a single person came forward to report any usable information about Victoria Cafasso's death. And this is something that really kind of leapt out at me. You've got a large number of people traversing this beach.
Right.
I'm imagining the scene of this individual committing what we know was a very violent act against this woman. Essentially, it's broad daylight. It's in the morning, but
yeah,
and there's people around.
Sure is.
He knocks her out with blows so brutal that three of her teeth are knocked out. He stabs her 20 plus times and somehow does this on a beach, and not a single person sees it, witnesses something that they think looks strange.
Yeah, none of that, right?
Yeah, very hard to believe. Now, if you're somewhere in the woods in the middle of nowhere, okay, I understand that. There's nobody yeah. there to witness.
No, I realize there's some sand dunes around there, but those sand dunes weren't tall enough to obscure anybody's view.
Yeah, it happens, right? It happens that people are around and maybe they're not paying attention. It is something that kind of really jumped out at me, though, is strange. You would have thought at least one person would have recognized that something very wrong was going on. Authorities profiled the attacker as a possible family man with an unpredictable, violent temper. Okay, that's your profile.
Yeah.
You're not really limiting that many people. I guess you can take out single men.
I guess.
But as a dad of two girls, you have a girl and a boy. I don't think that I have an unpredictable, violent temper. Can I get angry? Well, obviously I can get angry, and I do at times. I think anybody who has kids, whether they want to admit it or not, loses it from time to time and gets angry, not violently angry.
Right.
So what are we saying? This is a guy who has a family who has a history of violence. I'm thinking that's what they mean.
That could fly off the handle at any moment.
Well, but that's the thing. What does fly off the handle mean? I think I can fly off the handle. I can get upset and I can say, hey, I don't like what you're doing.
I guess it's the level of flying off the handle.
Well, and I think, you know, you've got to get into the area of violent behavior. I still think it's a pretty broad profile, really, if you think about it. On top of that, what made this case so difficult to investigate was the location where Victoria Cafasso was found. According to the Tasmania Mercury newspaper, former detective inspector Graham Hickey said that beach murders are especially tough because the scene is exposed to the elements. The tides and winds can erode evidence, as they did with the footprints around Victoria's body. Jeffrey Adams reported that he had waited with the body for 20 minutes. Before police officers from St. Helens arrived at the scene. So this means that Victoria's body and the entire crime scene were exposed to elements of wind and ocean water for an extra 20 minutes, which undoubtedly would have disturbed the original crime scene.
And that doesn't include how long the body was on the beach before it was discovered.
Yeah, which we don't know exactly. We mentioned it already, Gibbs, but it's important, right? Police officers at the crime scene had to move Victoria's body to avoid the tide from damaging evidence any further than it already had. But transitioning her body from the shore to higher up on the beach tampered with the body's original state, the state it was in after death. Detective Graham has criticized the management of the crime scene. He told reporters that police officers didn't close off the site promptly, which allowed far too many people to pass by and possibly even through the crime scene. Additionally, only one casting was taken of a footprint on the beach, and this footprint was not near the location where Victoria's body was originally found. The man watching the body while waiting for police to arrive has repeatedly said that he saw two large footprints near Victoria's body before police carried her body up the beach. Police have insisted over the years that those two alleged footprints were not present at the scene. The cast that was created was not enough to determine if the footprint belonged to a suspect or if they were the last few steps that Victoria took. I think one of the problems is they didn't take any casts of her feet for comparison. They only took photos.
Yeah. And that's a problem. I mean, that's just an investigation problem by not doing that. And also, I wouldn't know why the guy would lie about seeing footprints by the body.
Yeah, I don't either. You know, one of the things that I struggle with is, okay, how easy is it to take casts of footprints in the sand? I don't know the answer to that. I mean, I think about kind of like a footprint made in mud,
right?
That, let's say, hardens up a little bit. Okay, pretty easy.
Yeah, it's kind of stable.
But you've got an impression in the sand. The wind is blowing. When you try to make the cast, is it going to shift the sand
right
while you're trying to make it? It seems like it'd be pretty difficult to me.
I think there'd be a lot into the prep work of getting it ready to make a cast.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just don't know in the end how accurate it's going to be. We mentioned it, right? We don't know how long her body was there before it was found. And then we know about 20 minutes went by before police arrived. Yeah. So at what point do you start making the cast, and how much has it changed over that time period? Just 2.5 years before Victoria Cafasso's death, an incident involving another tourist occurred on March 12, 1993. A young German tourist by the name of Nancy Grunwald disappeared from the Beaumaris Beach area while going on a bike ride. Nancy Grunwald, who was a 26-year-old travel agent at the time, disappeared a few miles away from Beaumaris Beach. It was reported that she was reading a book on the beach before being last spotted a few miles south. A missing persons report was filed for Nancy on April 19, 1993 in Victoria. The Victoria police notified the Tasmania police that a missing persons report had been lodged in relation to Nancy Grunwald. During the time period between March 12, 1993, and the day the missing persons report was filed, a message was left for the police. This message was left by a male caller. The male voice was distraught, and he pleaded for help. The man recounted his involvement in a terrible accident on the east coast of Tasmania and asked for help and advice.
The problem is that the police erased the message on the recorder.
Yeah, that seems like something you shouldn't do.
Right.
But
you say, well, at least you jot the information down, right?
And put it in a file or
something like that, right? Yeah. Well, I left it on the recorder. Oh, but then they not good.
But then they erased it. So what does that mean? If, in fact, you figure out who this male is or who you think it is, you don't have the voice to compare to this person's voice. It's a big deal. A lot of people who have followed this case, the case of Nancy Grunwald, believe that this man was involved in a hit and run of Nancy. Some theorize that Nancy was riding her bike on the road when the caller struck her and killed her. In a panic, he disposed of her body. And then weeks later, he must have felt guilty and called the police. Now, there's other people that claim okay, it wasn't a hit and run. This man was just telling a story to throw off the police. But police never interviewed the caller, I think Gibbs, because they didn't know who he was. Right. They didn't have his name. And Nancy's body has never been discovered. Although the cause of Nancy Grunwald's disappearance is unknown, some believe that she was attacked by the same person who killed Victoria Cafasso. These two incidents involving young tourist women shocked Tasmania, and the residents had a suspicion that possibly a serial killer was running loose. The Tasmania Mercury newspaper reported that Detective Inspector John King strongly doubted that Victoria Cafasso's death is linked to the disappearance of Nancy Grunwald. The detective maintains that there's no direct connection between the two crimes. The Tasmania Examiner newspaper reported that in 2003, an inquest by coroner Don Jones began to relook at Victoria's case. Jones sought expert advice from Chris Lawrence, who was a pathologist working for the state of Tasmania. Chris was involved in creating video reenactments, which depicted how Victoria Cafasso's body could have gotten to the beach's shoreline. It's theorized that Victoria was dragged by her wrists to the water's edge. However, it's also thought that it would have been difficult for an individual to accomplish this, as Victoria was pretty tall. She was 5'8". She weighed 178 pounds. This has led investigators to believe that more than one person could have been involved in her murder.
Yeah, I'm not too sure about that. I feel like I could probably drag someone's body in the sand to a shoreline.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, not to be macabre about it, but yeah. You know, if you're just trying to get to the idea of whether it could be done or not, I think given that kind of terrain.
Yeah.
Don't you think that would make it a little easier, maybe?
I would think, and I would also think whoever committed the crime, their adrenaline had to be pretty high at that point.
I'm sure.
So that probably gave them even some additional strength.
And then I think you have to factor in the elevation change.
Yeah.
Right? Are you going downhill towards the shoreline, which would make it easier, obviously, than trying to drag a body uphill? In 2004, coroner Don Jones continued the inquest by speaking to more than 100 witnesses. When collecting witness testimonies, a local couple reported having seen Victoria walking to the beach. Now, initially, the husband dismissed the incident, believing the woman they had spotted was someone else. But the wife disagreed and later confirmed it was Cafasso. According to the wife, after Victoria had visited the ocean waters, she settled down on the sand at about 9:55 a.m. and then began sunbathing at 10:10 a.m. Coroner Jones reconfirmed what was already known in the following report he released. His report read, "The victim's death occurred between 10:10 a.m. and 1:30 p.m. on Wednesday, October 11th, 1995, most likely between 11:30 a.m. and 12:35 p.m. Before her death, she had been involved in a violent struggle during which the deceased attempted to defend herself. It's probable that the person or persons responsible for her death was physically powerful, and they used a blunt object in the attack while the deceased was still defending herself. The knife used in the attack was used after the deceased was subdued. Her death was caused by two fatal stab wounds in the chest's right front, penetrating the heart. The victim's body was left in the water, and probably the body drifted south along the beach with the prevailing current rather than being moved by a person or persons along the beach. However, it's not possible for me to conclude whether the attack was carried out by a person acting alone or more than one person acting in a common purpose. Also, I cannot conclude a motive for the attack. The Sydney Morning Herald reported that the local couple who had spotted Victoria sunbathing on the day she was murdered recalled, about 2 weeks before the murder, the wife had been approached by a man asking her where the nearest pathway was from the beach. She described this man as, quote, out of place, and said that he had given her an uneasy feeling. During the wife's daily routine of walking the beach, she had spotted the man repeatedly eyeing her as she went for a swim at the beach. She reported that when she returned home, her house's side door was open and her underwear, which she had left out on her bed before leaving for the beach, was missing. The wife stated to the police that the man who had followed her at the beach was a man named Tony Kirkland. Although he denied that he had followed her, Tony had a history of suspicious behavior. In 1998, a restraining order was filed against him for his inappropriate interest in a 17-year-old girl. Tony was reported as being uncooperative during the inquest into Victoria Cafasso's murder. The woman also stated that another man, a local man named Gary Holmes, had previously smashed the plywood door to the couple's home. Gary had a history of violence and a notoriously bad temper. Gary's friends even agreed that he fit the profile of the killer, and I guess, Gibbs, he often bragged about it, the fact that he fit the profile. Now, let's not forget, there's probably a bunch of people that fit that very broad profile.
Well, sure.
I don't know that I would go around bragging about it. A woman tragically lost her life.
Right.
And they're saying, okay, her killer is most likely this, this, and this. And you're going to sit around with your friends and say, yeah, that's me. I fit that.
Right.
I don't get that type of stuff.
Not a joking matter.
It's not a joking matter, number one. I also don't get trying to draw attention to yourself as potentially being a killer. I don't get that.
Certainly not going to get you invited to more get-togethers.
No. You think we should have Gary over for the party? No, let's scratch him off. During the investigation, Gary provided two different accounts about his whereabouts on October 11th. His inconsistent testimonies made it difficult for his alibi to be confirmed. I think the problem is, Gibbs, the authorities were not convinced that either of these two men committed the murder of Victoria Cafasso. The authorities further provided additional information on the killer's profile as someone who could have possibly been experiencing a psychotic episode during their attack on Victoria. They're really going out on a limb with these profiles, I got to tell you.
They really are, aren't they?
The authorities did take an interest in another person of interest by the name of Dr. Roman Hazel, who was living at St. Helens at the time. St. Helens is a suburb located about 5 miles away from Beaumaris Beach. During the early investigation, a witness reported that they saw the doctor at a service station in the area on the day or the day after the murder, and he had scratches on his face.
Suspicious.
In the context that you're being looked at as the killer, very suspicious. If you saw somebody at the service station that had scratches on their face, what would you think? They had just killed someone, or they'd been roughhousing with their cat?
Yeah, I guess it depends on how many scratches are on their face, but...
Okay.
But if the type of scratches that I'm imagining here, I'd be like, I don't know. That's awful suspicious, man. I'd have to...
Killer. You're naturally thinking killer.
Yeah. Like, you did it, didn't you?
Now, Dr. Hazel has denied his involvement in the case and insisted that the injuries were sustained from a fall while he was in a drunken state. He also claimed to be at home during the murder, although his alibi could not be confirmed.
Well, I have fallen a few times in a drunken state.
Yeah, that's got to be one heck of a fall, depending on the extent of the scratches, but we've all been there.
Yeah, well, you more than most.
A little too intoxicated. After the murder of Victoria Cafasso, Dr. Hazel moved from St. Helens to Hobart, Tasmania, to work at the Royal Hobart Hospital. However, he was later dismissed from work for drinking and for failing to disclose a jail term. And sometimes they don't like that. Either one, really. They don't like doctors drinking at work.
That's always a big no.
Yep. And I don't think a lot of hospitals like their doctors with a criminal record, depending on what it is.
I'm going to go out on the limb and say most employers don't like that. Without, they want to know. Tell them.
And I think that's part of why he was dismissed. Not so much that he had a jail term, but that he didn't disclose it. And maybe if he had, they wouldn't have hired him in the first place. I don't know. But what's interesting is that this incident was not a one-time thing. You know, over the next several years, he was dismissed from more places. He had complaints filed against him at various hospitals. These charges were concerning his drinking habits and his misconduct with patients. Again, all things that hospitals don't like.
Not a good thing. I looked him up in some of the newspapers and I thought, oh my gosh, man, this guy, he was all over the place.
Meaning at a bunch of different hospitals?
Yeah, it had all kind of, you know, incidents.
Well, if you have incidents, then you have to keep moving.
Yeah.
And you and I, now this is not that long ago, but you and I have talked about cases that are much older involving both doctors and nurses. And unfortunately, they were able to move from hospital to hospital without really any of the suspicions or the things on their record really even kind of following them. Right. It was scary.
Yeah.
It eventually got so bad that his license was suspended twice, once in New Zealand and another time in New South Wales. In 2012, Dr. Hazel was convicted of unprofessional conduct in his practice of medicine. So, I mean, I think it's safe to say that we don't know if this guy had anything to do with the murder, but he's not a doctor that you want to go see.
No.
I feel pretty comfortable with making that diagnosis.
I saw one article where he apologized because, you know, he wanted to get his license back.
Well, sure.
Oh, of course you're going to apologize. Yeah, I'm so sorry for all the wrong I've done. Now, may I please have my license back? No, you may not.
Well, and it's such an occupation of trust.
Yeah.
The responsibility that goes along with being a doctor is so great that it's really kind of hard to skate by with doing some of these things because, man, you can't be a doctor if you're going to drink on the job.
Right.
Act inappropriately with patients and do all of these things. You've lost all trust.
You're an insurance nightmare for the hospital or wherever you're working at, right?
Oh, absolutely. I didn't even think of that. No one has ever been charged with the murder of Victoria Cafasso. And the coroner eventually found that Nancy Grunwald died as a result of foul play by an unknown person, although her body or possessions have never been found. So I think the residents of the area and the surrounding areas, they had a lot of fears, Gibbs, that a serial killer was out there and had either killed both Victoria and Nancy, or they were killed by separate people. But either way, right, that's going to cause a lot of fear. So you have one person or you have multiple people. And then to put it in context, the crimes of Martin Bryan occurred about 6 months after the murder of Victoria Cafasso. So, you know, if they were fearful before, obviously after he did what he did, that just intensified those fears. There was a lot going on.
Yeah.
You'd have to admit that. But when you look at these two cases, other than the fact that the victims were both young, foreign women, and the location of their final moments was near Beaumaris Beach, there's really no evidence that's ever been discovered that links the two cases together definitively, and both cases remain unsolved to this day. In the case of Victoria Cafasso, currently, there's reward money of $100,000 for anyone who has important information. For anyone with information on Nancy Grunwald's case, there is a reward of up to $30,000 for details that would assist investigators in the prosecution of an offender. So I don't know, Gibbs, we included information on both of these cases in this episode. To me, it makes a lot of sense, even though there's really nothing to say that they're connected. But they happened a couple years apart.
Right.
In close proximity and pretty much the same place. It is interesting that there's the connection of, you know, Victoria being an Italian tourist, Nancy being a German tourist. So you could hypothesize that you had a local individual who was preying on people that he or she knew were tourists from another country.
And that makes good sense.
It does. It's also a hypothesis. It's right. A guess. It's, you know, let's throw things out there, but that's kind of what you have to do in some of these unsolved cases.
But I can also see where Nancy could have been hit by an oncoming vehicle. You know, if the person was drunk or not, or just a bad driver, whatever, you know, calls the police, wants to confess, but no one ever gets his information. And then he's probably thinks about it and says, you know what? Yeah, I don't really want to confess to that, and doesn't. And then years later, you have what happened to Victoria, which is unrelated to Nancy.
Yeah, I see that as a distinct possibility. I think what really interests me about Nancy's case is the coroner coming out and making the determination that she died as a result of foul play by an unknown person. Number one, I really don't know how you make that determination without a body.
Right.
So I do think there's a possibility that she could have died in a hit and run accident. Now, you could make the argument that is still foul play.
Right.
It's an accident up until the point that you don't report it, try to get her help or call the authorities. Now you've got fault. You know, you could call that foul play.
Sure you could.
And maybe that's how they're making that determination. I don't know, man. These cases down in Tasmania, they always get me.
Yeah.
There's a lot of strange things that go into some of these. You know, focusing in on Victoria's murder, I keep going back to the location, you know, on the beach with the chance that one or 10 people could be walking by it at any moment and see you, get a description of you, and pass that on to police.
I mean, no doubt the killer had to be pretty brazen.
And so what does that mean? That they don't care? Does it mean that they're local and they have a very good understanding of kind of the beach pattern, the traffic, and what times people start walking the beach and kind of all of that?
Yeah, all of the above.
Or all of the above. I think it's all things that I'm sure the police have thought about, looked into. Or is it just a person that said, this is what I want to do. I don't care about the ramifications. And it just so happened that nobody saw me.
Yeah.
You know, that could be 100% accurate as well. But that's it, Gibbs, for our case of Victoria Cafasso and Nancy Grunwald. We got some voicemails. You want to check those out?
Yeah, let's hear them.
Hi, Mike and Gibby. This is Nadia in Arkansas. I just listened to your episode it's from 2019 on Unsolved, and it was about Morgan Nick. And I just thought it was really interesting because that case has actually become big news recently here in Arkansas. It's actually probably the most well-known missing persons case in Arkansas. And just recently, the past few days, they released a documentary on it in honor of the 25th anniversary of her missing. And they also released footage of the truck that was involved in her disappearance. So I just thought it was really interesting that I just happened to be listening to that episode. And they were doing this kind of new push for information. So if you guys get a chance to check it out, there's a lot of news coverage on it, and they actually have a photo of the truck, the red truck with the camper kind of attachment to it. So it's super cool to look at that, and they're getting a ton of new leads about it. So it looks like, you know, it could potentially be solved, and that's super cool, especially since her family is so involved with the Morgan Nick Foundation, helping a lot of other people. So yeah, just thought I would let you guys know, and maybe you could look into it. Thanks.
Well, Gibbs, you love to hear that.
I do.
Because you and I talk about it all the time. We want to see all of these cases solved.
Yes.
Now, what's the likelihood of that? Eventually, maybe. But when you see authorities kind of re-energized and making a push, now maybe it's because it's an anniversary, maybe it's because they've uncovered more evidence, but getting it out there can only be helpful.
Yeah.
Right. In trying to solve the case. So you really like to see that.
Thanks for the update.
Yeah. Thank you.
Hey guys, this is David calling out of Salt Lake City. I'm a long time listener. I've always meant to call and just let you guys know, I really enjoy the show. Calling because I wanted to give you guys two case suggestions that are close to me personally. I'm from the Philadelphia area, and they're both from that area. One's an unsolved, and one is a solved. The unsolved episode, I don't know if you'll be able to find anything, but it's for Alex Buonasisi. He was arrested on some drug charges and then went missing along with his vehicle and has never been seen again after a big court case. And then the other case is a solved case of Grace Packer. Pretty brutal story, and there's a lot of info out there, and I think it'd be a good case for the show. So anyway, keep your own time ticking, or since nobody wears watches, keep your phone battery charged so you can keep your time going. Anyway, thanks a lot and have a good day. Bye.
So two cases that we'll definitely check out. I want to address this phone time thing.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if this is a generational thing or if it's just some people are this way and some people are that way. I know my kids, they have an Apple Watch, but if it wasn't for that, they'd never wear a watch.
Yeah.
They would use their phone to see what time it is. You know me, I'm like the other way around. I love watches. I collect watches. I kind of live by the watch. I never look at my phone for the time. I just don't. Even though I have it with me all the time.
Sometimes you wear that pocket watch.
Yeah. Well, when I'm conducting the train.
Well, that's true. Got to have it.
Toot, toot.
Yeah.
Hey, Mike and Gibby. My name's Rebecca. I'm calling all the way from Australia, mate. How are you, boys? Just finished listening to the episode about Mark Valera. So crazy. I remember when that happened. I actually live in Wollongong now. And at the time, I used to live in an area called Kiama. And I used to catch a train up to Wollongong. And I remember when David O'Hearn got murdered because the train line runs down the back of his unit or his townhouse. And I remember seeing all the craziness with the police and, you know, whatnot. It's really crazy to hear you guys talk about it. And also where I live in Wollongong now, it's near, not far from where Frank Arkell was murdered. So, yeah, it's really crazy to hear you guys talk about it. The other thing that I needed to say was it's so funny to hear you guys pronounce the way Australian towns and cities are, like Lithgow, not Lithgow, Mike, very funny. anyway, love listening to you guys. Your banter is awesome, or as we like to say in Australia, you know, the way you shoot the shit really makes me laugh. And I look forward to listening to you guys in the future. Bye.
Well, we'd love to shoot the shit.
Yeah, that's kind of a saying here too. Yeah. Shoot the shit. So what's interesting about, it's not just Australia, it's towns, yeah, cities all over the world. Can we not just spell them the way that they're said? I mean, just take Wollongong,
right,
for example. If you said it the way it's spelled, it would be Wollongong.
Yeah.
All right, let's fix that. Come on now.
Yeah.
Help us out.
We have the same problem up in New York though, so don't worry.
Yeah, we do. Man. New York really throws me off. What's the other one? Oklahoma?
Yes.
I get really thrown off with some of the ones in Oklahoma.
Hi, Fergie. Hi, Gibby. This is Shannon Mize calling from Illinois, as you would say. Hello?
That was it.
That's all?
Yeah.
Hope she's all right.
I know, it scared me. I think it was just a phone issue.
Hope so.
But please call back. Let us know you're okay. I think because I've been watching a lot of suspenseful type scary movies.
Yeah. At least she said Illinois.
Yeah. Or Illinois.
Yeah.
People make caveats for you, even though they know you're wrong. But yes.
Are you sure?
Yeah. Everybody knows that you don't pronounce the S.
Maybe everybody else has always had this wrong.
Maybe. Maybe you are right and everybody else is wrong.
Exactly.
Maybe. Maybe. We don't know.
Possibility.
All right, buddy. That is it for another episode of True Crime All the Time Unsolved. So for Mike
and Gibby,
stay safe and keep your own time ticking.